Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Knocking your teeth loose with the best hockey coverage possible. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, the Fan simulcast on Sportsnet in the United States on the NHL Network. A very sad day for the hockey world as we mourn the passing of three parts of our sport. Mm-hmm. Murray Oliver, Victor Tikhonov, and Pat Quinn. Darren Millard along with John Shannon and Gord Stellick. Pat Quinn passing away at the age of 71 after a lengthy illness. We're going to reminisce about Pat Quinn's time in the National Hockey League as both player, coach, add-in general manager, president. Let's bring in first Bob Nicholson, who was the president of Hockey Canada when Pat Quinn coached Canada to its Olympic gold medal in Salt Lake City, ending that 50-year drought. He's now the vice chairman of the Oilers Entertainment Group. Bob, your time and relationship with Pat goes back a long way. Tell us where it started and your memories and thoughts of the player and the coach and the manager.
Yeah, Darren, really it goes back a long time. When I was working in BC Hockey as the development coordinator, and he was in Vancouver, and you know, we had a great relationship. He did so much for development of hockey in BC at that time, but I really, our true relationship started in 1996 when he became part of the management for the Men's World Championship, and he was out of his job in Vancouver, and he came on, and you know, we won the gold in 97 with him part of that. And from there, you know, our friendship grew. We spent a lot of summers together with him and Sandra and his family and my family. And, you know, he's the only coach to win a gold medal at under 18 juniors and the Olympics in 2002 was so special. And then again and in the World Cup. So he's done so much for our country, but, you know, just he's such a great guy and will sorely be missed in the hockey world.
Bob, you talk about your relationship at BC Hockey and the Canucks those many years ago. In many ways, and you knew the Griffiths family as well, no Pat Quinn in Vancouver, there's a good chance there might not be a Vancouver Canuck franchise.
Yeah, you know, the Griffin family and the Quinn family were so tight. And, you know, without Pat coming in, and the Griffins, I'm not sure if that franchise survives. And, you know, Pat's always seen really Vancouver as his home, even, you know, wherever he was involved in hockey, he always went back to Vancouver. And, you know, those players in those days just idolized Pat Quinn and, you know, what he brought as a coach, but what he just brought to make each one of those people a better person.
You know, we talk about whether it's certainly Toronto, Vancouver, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, all the mark he made on those NHL franchises. I'm curious, Bob, the part we don't see as much, the success at the Olympics and with the World Junior team as well. I mean, that's hard to do. A lot of guys that have success at the NHL level, big picture, have a hard time in the small picture having the success. What was it about him that he was able to strike gold?
Yeah, you know what? I'll walk through quickly, all of them. Salt Lake City, you know, Wayne Gretzky and myself both felt there was only one guy to lead that team then, and it was Pat Quinn because of his presence. We hadn't won a gold medal in 50 years, and, you know, he had great staff with him on the coaching staff with Jacques and Hitch and especially Wayne Fleming. You know, and we didn't start off very well in that tournament. You know, Sweden clobbered us, but with the presence of Pat and the leadership of the team, the players were able to win that gold medal. And that really transferred down. If everyone remembers the World Juniors in Ottawa, you know, we were behind in a lot of those games, you know, and Everly scoring against the Russians. And it was his presence on the bench that really gave those young players the confidence that they could win. And that translated to, I think we beat the Russians 8-0 in the under 18 on their home soil. And that's the type of person he was. He just instilled confidence in all of the players to go after their goals, and has had such an impact on Canada and the international stage.
To follow up on Gordy's question, here is a guy in his mid-60s that coached in Ottawa at the World Juniors. How was he able to communicate so well with teenagers?
You know, I think it's just how he addresses players, and always was, always did, John, in that he, you know, he just talked to him straight up. He didn't have a lot of words to say, but he treated everyone like a man, and there was no gray in what Pat ever told you. It was just straightforward, and, you know, I remember that game against the U.S. When they came out and were, you know, really blitzed us and were ahead in the first period. And I don't think there would be any other coach in our country that could have kept our group together and give them that confidence to win.
Bob Nicholson now works for the Edmonton Oilers, the Edmonton Oilers Entertainment Group, but a longtime president of Hockey Canada with us on the day that we remember Pat Quinn, who passed away yesterday at the age of 71. It's Darren Millard along with John Shannon and Gord Stellick. You were up close. You were part of that inner circle when he coached the men at the Olympic Games in 2002, 2006, winning gold medal in 2002, but also with the World Juniors and the under 18. Did his style change from group to group, or was it fairly consistent?
You know what? It was really, really consistent, and you know, he really leaned on his assistant coaches. And I can tell you, you know, Wayne Fleming was working full time with Hockey Canada and didn't know Pat Quinn very well when it first started, and he got to know Wayne. And once he got to know Wayne, he gave his, you know, the trust to Wayne to really build the plan of, you know, going into the Olympics games. Wayne had been there before with Dave King, and then Wayne really convinced Pat and worked especially with Hitch and Jacques Martin on the plan. And it takes a while to get Pat's trust, but when you do, you never lose it. And really, that was what Wayne did with that team.
Bob, can you explain what Pat and how he touched you personally?
Yeah, you know what, John? We became real good friends. We spent a lot of summers together in Penticton, and we had lots of great times together, and, you know, he was one of the best storytellers there was, and I'll never forget those days in Penticton with my family and his family. We had a lot of great summers together.
You know, it sounds as well that getting back to the Canadian team and that dealing with people was a strength. And you mentioned, John, about the Vancouver Canucks and the legacy there. But to go from the Griffiths family to, what was it, Orca Bay, I mean, that was a tough grind. I mean, that was, he did both well, but didn't like the corporate way. But still, the Canucks succeeded almost in spite of it because of Pat Quinn.
Yeah, he certainly liked to have the personal connection more than the corporate way. He didn't have a lot of time for that, but he certainly would find a way to make it all work. And that's the way he was. You know, he would read the situations and find the best way to go about them. But he always liked to have the real personal touch and just the one-on-ones. And he certainly had that in the Griffin family. And, you know, it certainly changed when it went to Orca Bay.
Difficult day when you lose a close friend like you have and the hockey world has. We really appreciate you sharing your thoughts about Pat Quinn, the man, the person, and the coach.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. And, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to Sandra and Callie and the whole family. Thank you.
Bob Nicholson talking to us from Edmonton. Darren Millard along with John Shannon and Gord Stellick. Gentlemen, because Bob was right off the top of the show, didn't give you a chance to really share your initial thoughts. But, John, you've known him for a long time from your time as a producer, and You've worked with him as a coach and as a manager.
Well, you know, he's one of those guys, and Gordy can reflect on this because Gordy and I have similar backgrounds and similar, you know, fanatical discussion points. I mean, I remember exactly where I was when he hit Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
I was sitting in we were watching a hockey game for the first time in color TV in 1969 when he hit Orr at the Boston Garden. That, to me, was iconic. I remember when he skated out for the first time for the Vancouver Canucks, a team that I adored. And Pat came out as, excuse me, as number three. And then my first Stanley Cup final was 1980. And Pat was the coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. I'll tell you what, I didn't think it would be a tough day. This is a tough day. Pat Quinn and I, we worked together at Maple Leaf Sports. We were there at the Olympics in Salt Lake. His most proud moment, by the way, in Salt Lake, I can never forget this, is there was a family room around the corner from the East Center. And Pat wore the same socks through the whole Olympics, if everybody remembers. And they were socks given to him by his granddaughter. And they had sparkles on them. And so there's this big Irishman sitting in the corner with the families and the players of the team, smoking his cigar at that point, and these ugly socks. And Pat was so proud. He was more proud of the socks than he was of the team because they were from his granddaughter. That's how I'll remember Pat Quinn.
You know, it's I didn't work with him as much as you did, John, but certainly I think about some of the stories as well. People forget that he talked about the skateboard accident he had. He was a defenseman with the Atlanta Flames, and one of his kids' skateboard is, I don't know, he was trying it, whatever, and that kind of put an end to his playing career. I mean, the lighter side that way. But I'll tell you, when I was fired by the New York Rangers, after being with the Leafs and with the New York Rangers, assistant general manager, I'm fired, and which happens all the time. But then there's a question, they're looking to go after me for cause. So I'm in my lonely apartment phoning everybody. You know, just, you know, no cell phones back then. It's surprising the guys that don't get back to you and that, mm-hmm. but a lot of people didn't. So I'm talking to Brian Burke, and then he says, anyway, Pat Quinn phones back the next day and just says, you've got to pursue this, that they can't go after you that way, and we're prepared to loan you money if you have to get... Anyway, I'm just saying, you always remember that phone call from an unexpected source.
Here is Harry Neal. Some of my memories of Pat Quinn go back to the post-game press conferences at Air Canada Centre when he was coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you would slide down on a Saturday night from your duties with Hockey Night in Canada, and you and Pat had this, I think it was for the MapleLeafs.com or Leafs TV. You would do a sit-down interview with them, and it served up some of the most remarkable quotes between the two of you, but it was also so darn casual. And you felt like you were in the room with the two of you.
Well, that was mostly due to Quinn, not me. But I knew Pat long before I got into the television business. I watched him play, and I was very happy. I never had to play against him because he was a tough customer, to say the least. And then when he started to coach, he lost his job in Philadelphia, and I was the general manager in Vancouver. And he was my choice to succeed Roger Neilson. But the Griffiths family said I couldn't do it. And I think what happened was that Pat might have gone into a little bit of trouble in Philadelphia with Keith Allen, who was the president then, or the Quinn's boss. And he must have talked to Griffiths, because they wouldn't let me hire him, which really made me mad, because I thought he would be ideal to coach the Vancouver Canucks, and he liked to have a rough and tumble team, and we were getting to be that way. And when he told me that he was really mad at me for not hiring him, I think he believed me when I told him the truth. But in the television business, he was a gem to travel with. I hate to tell you some of the stories we had on the road when he took us to famous golf courses when we were in Texas or in Florida on days off. So not only was he a player to be remembered, a coach to be remembered, but even more important than that, one of the great guys in the business.
Well, yeah, as a former coach, what was it that made him a great coach? I mean, a lot of guys have a shelf life, and you see, boy, they did a great job back then, but doesn't translate whether it's nowadays. Every stop, he was a great coach, had a great coaching record. What were the keys?
Well, his players are probably afraid of him. They should have been. But, you know, I think he with his demeanor as a person, that he got very quickly a lovely little air between him and the players. And they knew when they weren't doing the job that they'd hear about it. And they also knew when they did do the job, they'd hear about it. And as a coach, that's very difficult to do. Too often, coaches, all they remember are the mistakes. And as a result, they don't. And I'm speaking of myself as a coach, too, that you spend too much time trying to correct the players and maybe not enough time trying to congratulate them when they do things right. And Quinn had that great ability. If you played well, you knew about it. And if you didn't, you knew about it. And no player can ask for anything better than that.
Well, the Griffiths must have believed you at some point because they hired him later on, Harry, you know, to fix the situation in Vancouver. As a Hamiltonian like you are, and Pat was a Hamiltonian, when you saw him play, I guess, for the Red Wings first and then in the NHL, what were your thoughts?
Well, you loved the fact that he was, in those days, they didn't have very many players his size. And they didn't. They had a few players that got into the frame of mind he got into when he got on the ice, but not all of them could back it up. And so I admired Quinn because he could play both ways. He could play the game when it was a streamlined hockey game, and he could play the game when it was a rough-and-tumble game. And in those days, when he played, there were more of those game-type games than there are now because of the rivalries and the fewer number teams and the more often you played each other. So whether you remember Quinn as a player, as a coach, as a manager, or on TV, remember him as a guy, a great guy. And my sympathy goes to Sandra and her family because they were part of the reason Quinn was as successful as he was.
Harry Neal chatting with us on Hockey Central at noon as we mourn the passing of Pat Quinn. Darren Millard with John Shannon and Gord Stellick. Some tweets coming in from Stephen Harper. Pat Quinn was a giant of the hockey world on the ice and off. Lorraine and I extend our condolences to his family. Brian Burke also says, who I reached out to come on the program today. He says he's not going to do any interviews on this day, along with Ron Toigo, co-owner of the Vancouver Giants. But Brian says, my prayers are with Pat Quinn's family. He was tough. He was smart, kind, and Irish. The hockey world will miss him deeply. Harry, do you remember the player, the coach, or the person? Like, how do you reflect on Pat Quinn with your relationships?
Well, I would say as a person is first, because I got to know him awfully well when I was doing the Leaf games and he was coaching the Leafs, even though I knew him kind of casually, as you know, people in the business. But when they don't work with you or for you, you don't get to know them as well as you'd like. So in my opinion, and this is a compliment completely from me, and I'm sure other people who knew him on the three little the levels, the personal level, the professional level, at the hockey level, he was a star in all of them. But my sympathy today is that he's gone, and we miss him as a person. And we'll always be able to look up his record as a player, as a coach, and a manager, and a guy who was a true Canadian with reference to his work with the Olympic and the World Cup teams. Let's not put it out of perspective. We really feel as badly as we do because anybody who knew him was a friend, and he was a true friend of all of us.
And he was also a very good mentor, wasn't he? When you think about the people who worked for him and alongside him, when you consider guys like Brian Burke and George McPhee and Steve Tambellini, other people in the hockey world that have left their mark, Harry.
Right, and a number of players that have probably got into the hockey business after their playing careers over because Quinn was a guy that maybe paved the highway a little
like
bit.
Like Trevor.
For those people that you just, yeah, like Trevor. Regarding the players you just mentioned, and there are others, I am sure, and I never had the ability to do this or fortunate to do it, would be work for Pat. Mm-hmm. I worked with him, but I never worked for him, and I think that if I did, then you'd have learned things about how to handle yourself in all kinds of situations in the business of hockey that you could use if you stayed in it. And people who worked for him ended up being pretty successful when they got big time jobs.
Yeah, and the larger life persona though you can't teach, and it's not just Griffith. Steve Stavro, I mean, the owner loved him. Yeah. They just loved that, relished Pat being in charge. And then on the media side, a lot of media guys are tweeting that he had a larger life persona, that he did not suffer. You were afraid to ask a foolish question, but he also would give you great answers. So that's what it was. It wasn't the regular soundbite. I mean, he had a certain persona that he'd go back at you if you didn't like it, but also you could elicit really intelligent responses.
Yeah, and he was one of the more humorous guys you'd ever want to meet when you got him away from the rink. That's why he and I hit it off so well, as lying to each other about funny stories that didn't happen, but they wished it happened. So it was always pleasant to go out and have a couple of beers with Pat, or play golf with him, or even to sit beside him on the bus or the plane, because the next thing you know, you were laughing at some of the stories he was telling you. And some of them, you almost were crying because they were very sentimental.
The coaching resume is dotted with great successes. The undefeated streak in Philadelphia, and reaching a couple of Stanley Cup finals with the Flyers, and then the Vancouver Canucks. But you think about maybe one of the toughest decisions he maybe ever had to make was in Salt Lake City, when he had his own goaltender from his team and made the decision to sit Cujo down, and that relationship was probably never the same after that. But he put the moment and the tournament ahead of what was going to happen after that. And I don't know, Harry, can you speak to how difficult that decision maybe would have been?
Well, I'm sure from a personal viewpoint it was, but from a hockey viewpoint, he did what he always does. He made the moves he thought he should make to try and win. And as much as Curtis Joseph would love to have played, and they might have won with Curtis Joseph, nobody ever knows the answer to that story. But knowing Curtis as I do, I am sure, as disappointed as he was, that did not fracture in one single splinter the relationship he and Pat.
Harry, you were in the booth in 94 when the Canucks went to Game 7 at the Garden against the Rangers and lost, and you were there again in 1999 and 2002 when the Maple Leafs lost in the conference final with Pat behind the bench. We've talked about his great things. Can you talk about what it would have meant to him to lose those games and what he was like as a competitor?
Well, when you get to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals and you're that close, but Pat will tell you we were further away than we thought. But, you know, when the dust settles, even though you didn't win the cup, I am absolutely sure, and I know this from my own experience with the Vancouver Canucks when we made the finals. You look back at that playoff run and that season, and you're so proud of your team, but it's too bad you didn't get the cup to prove it. But in your mind, you didn't need the cup to prove it.
Harry, we really appreciate you taking the time on a difficult day for you, I'm sure.
Well, I've got calls from four people, and they all sound the same way. We're going to miss him, but we're going to remember him. And what more could anyone ask?
Well put. Well said. Harry Neal, who's known for his quote or two. Along with John Shannon and Gord Stellick, Darren Millard here at Hockey Central. Some hockey news to squeeze in here. And
life goes on.
Yeah, the Edmonton Oilers going through a very difficult season to start. Pat's last stop in the NHL. Have fired the goalie coach, Frederick Chabot. So that's where we wondered,
okay,
what would happen during the course of this struggling campaign, which they can't beat a Western Conference opposition, but the goaltending, which hasn't been good enough, you can put some of that on management as well, whether or not you brought in the right guys. But Frederick Chabot is the man that was taking the blame right now, with Victor Fast and Ben Scrivens unable to get the job done for the Edmonton Oilers. So Frederick Chabot, the goalie coach for the Edmonton Oilers, has been let go from the hockey club. Pat Quinn, you remember, he's one of the first guys that stepped away from the game, got his law degree, and came back and functioned first as a coach, but he was sort of that a growing trend. Maybe not the very first guy, but certainly part of the initial stages of that.
Well, I mean, it was Ken Dryden took a year off to pursue an article in a law firm. But, you know, in Pat Quinn's way, it was a little bit different. Like, I mean, Pat, career ends. He's thinking about law school. That's where he was going to go. Unfortunately, or fortunately for him, unfortunately, you want to kid about it, but he did a great job with the Maine Mariners in the American Hockey League. And he looked like a professor then, too. He smoked a pipe and all, you know, and it was just, he was sort of dabbling in coaching. Then he gets a law degree, and then he keeps having success. And keep in mind as well that he went to Vancouver. He's the guy that says, I'm going to hire a player agent in Brian Burke to be my right-hand man. And then that led to Pierre Lacroix and Bill Waters and a lot of other guys, you know, become Dean Lombardi. That led to all those guys becoming on the management side. So he was unafraid to be novel and think outside the box.
The one thing about Quinn is that, and Pat told me this himself, he actually started his education, his post-secondary education, when he was playing in Memphis in the Central Hockey League. That's when he started to get his undergrad on the way to get the law degree. So it was one of those things where when you had time in the minor leagues, you weren't going to play games on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You're usually playing on the weekends. He actually took time to take classes in Memphis to start that law degree process. The other thing that, and we talked today about teams with president of hockey operations and general managers below them. The blueprint for all of that, in my mind, I think Pat created that in so many ways. When you consider his role and then hiring that Brian Burke type as assistant GM, maybe the titles were different, but he ran his hockey teams like a CEO. He was at the top of the food chain, and he was literally sitting there saying, give me the information, we'll make the decision. And a lot of the legwork on a regular basis was done by guys like Burke and McPhee and Waters, and they actually had a lot of the chores of a regular general manager. It was Pat's ability to sit back, ascertain, judge the situation, and then always he loved to coach too. So he needed that body to be able to go and do that system the way he created.
Difficult day for Rick Lee as well.
Very
long time.
But I think the law degree as well, or pursuing law, I think it gave him the confidence that he maybe wasn't sure he was going to be a lifer. He ends up being a lifer in hockey, but he always had something to fall back on. So a lot of other guys are paranoid, won't hire the best person possible. They don't want someone who'll take their job. Mm-hmm. He was totally unafraid. He got the best people. He promoted them that way, and they went out and got other jobs. But he was the style and way he had success, I think, was a lot because he felt he had something great to fall back on if hockey didn't work out.
I really wish everybody could have spent 5 minutes in a room with him.
Oh.
Because he did have that. I was fortunate enough to go to a couple of backyard barbecues with friends of his, and he did put you at ease.
Oh, yeah.
He made sure you were part of the conversation.
Well, beyond
the hockey, though, right?
You know, Bob Nicholson talked about the summers in Penticton. One of the annual rites and rituals for me now is to go to the BC Hockey Hall of Fame. And a couple of years, I brought my daughter with me, who's a teenager, a typical teenager. But she loves hockey, and, you know, she likes hanging around her dad once in a while. And we would stay at the same hotel, and Pat and Sandra would be there. And before you know it, Pat and Sandra and my daughter Maya and I are sitting having breakfast, and he's fully engaged with my 15-year-old daughter, talking about hockey, what she likes about hockey, what she's going to do with her life. He had an amazing gift to be able to talk to people of so many different levels, so many age groups. And that was one of his great charms. He truly was a gregarious person and loved to be around young people.
His last time I saw him here was in August at a tribute dinner for Ron Ellis at the Hockey Hall of Fame. And Pat was one of the speakers. And it was obvious he didn't look great. And so that was, people were concerned. He just said, oh, I got to figure some stuff out. But you know what? He killed. He was the guy. He was the best speaker. He was funny. I mean, there are a lot of pretty good speakers out there paying tribute, you know, to Ron Ellis or Team Canada, Memorial Cup, Stanley Cup, all those other things. And Pat absolutely, again, stole the show.
A Memorial Cup champion, Olympic champion, under 18, and world junior champion, a Stanley Cup finalist, Pat Quinn, passing away at the age of 71. George McPhee, one of those that worked under Pat Quinn and grew to be a longtime general manager, will stop by on Hockey Central at noon. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, the NHL Network in the United States. Darren Millard here with John Shannon and Gord Stellick. We mourn the passing of a couple of high-profile coaches, Viktor Tikhonov from the Soviet Union, and Pat Quinn, who passed away at the age of 71. Here is George McPhee, a longtime general manager of the Washington Capitals, but cut his teeth under Pat Quinn with the Vancouver Canucks. George, when you think of Pat, what jumps out into your mind first and foremost?
Really a father figure, I think, that's the kind of impact I think that he has had on a lot of people's lives, his players, the staff that he had with him different times. And I really think that's how you measure a man is the impact he has on people's lives. And Pat sure had a great impact on a lot of people's lives. And he was, when he called, it, for me, it felt like it was your father calling.
George, in your day-to-day workings as a manager, were those times when you started to say something and said, I sound exactly like Pat? Was that the type of thing you're talking about?
I would hope so. I would hope I learned a lot from him that way. But I what I admired about Pat was his humility and how he always had time for people and how he treated people so well. And again, that's, when you measure a man, you measure his heart, you measure his kindness, you measure did he serve people, did he help people. And, he came off, he had enormous presence. He was a big man. He had an intimidating look to him. But when you got to know him, he was one of the kindest human beings that you'd ever want to meet.
George, obviously Brian Burke, he had a relationship with, and he had the job first in Vancouver. And I'm curious, how did it work out that you became Pat's second right-hand guy after Brian Burke?
I was actually at a Hobie Baker banquet in Minnesota, and I ran into Berkey there, and he introduced himself. I was just finished my first year of law school, and Berkey came over and said hi and said, I really admire that you're going to law school after playing hockey, and people that played the game should stay in the game, and I'd like to help you out. And so he invited me to come up and intern with the Canucks that summer, and I did. And then a couple of years later, Berkey was taking the Hartford president and GM's job and recommended that the path that I'd be interviewed, and I was just graduating from law school. And that's how it happened. I went up and interviewed, and couldn't have been more nervous when I first saw Pat walk in the room. You feel the full impact of his presence, but it worked out. And I've told a number of people that of all the blessings I've had in hockey, all the good things, he was number one to be able to work with that man.
Some people may have forgotten, but when you took your Washington Capitals to the Stanley Cup Final in 1998, you usually sit alone in your box. But yeah. During the playoff run that year, you didn't sit alone, did you?
No, I was really proud to ask Pat to come and Sandra to come down, and they were there in the finals, and it was, I was just trying to pay him back somehow, and actually it helped, I think, because his profile was out there again, and then Toronto ended up hiring him, and it was a real good move for Pat and for the Toronto organization.
What skill did you admire the most about Pat Quinn, whether it be coach or a manager or a player?
Pat was a really bright guy, deep thinker, very well read, and I've told a number of people, you can talk to him about politics, about the law, about history, geography, religion, and they were really, the conversations were really engaging and stimulating, and I think what I admire most is his ability to sit and listen to people. And when you walked in, he'd put things down, he'd look you in the eye, and he'd listen. And but he did it with everyone. There was never a contrived thing with Pat. He always, always had time for people, people coming in off the street. I'll never forget being at the P&E out there. The casual fan, the season ticket holder, the big sponsor, it didn't matter. Pat would have time for them. They'd come in off the street. We weren't getting any work done, but he was making someone feel better.
His passion still always coaching, like he was an excellent general manager, but it just seemed like, unlike most GMs, he had that real ability and knack and was a great coach as well.
He was an outstanding coach, and he, I think he's one of the best our game has seen. I don't think people realize it. You know, he got the Flyers to the final, he got the Canucks to the final, he won a gold medal with Canada. But, you know, the gold medal of the team with Canada was a really talented team, but those other teams that he got to the finals, you know, he never had really talented teams, but he got the most out of them. And I think that's a pretty good measure, too. I think if he had some really talented teams, he would have won cups.
George, our condolences passing along to you on the passing of Pat Quinn.
Thanks very much for having me. Thanks, guys.
George McPhee, former general manager of the Washington Capitals, his relationship, Pat. With Pat goes so deep that his son Graham's middle name is Quinn. Here is Curtis Joseph, whose best hockey was arguably played under Pat Quinn on Hockey Central at noon. What was he like in the dressing room, whether it be good times or bad times, Pat or Cujo?
Pat was a very patient man, and he was a great guy, actually. I really enjoyed Pat. He was good for me. And the way I played, so I have very fond memories.
When the dust settled after the Olympics there, I'm just curious, obviously that was a bit of a hiccup along the way, and I'm just, how have things been with Pat since then as you reflect back on the time?
Oh, it's great. There was a lot of pressure, obviously, in the Olympics, and, you know, anytime you're in that position, you got to go with who you think is going to win a gold medal. And, you know, I lost the first game, and Marty was playing out of his mind. And it was the right decision at the time. And you know, we just continued on. And I've seen Pat many times since, and everything's good.
Curtis, can you explain the relationship you would have had with Pat when you signed with the Maple Leafs and when he was behind the bench? And you know, let's face it, this team hasn't had success like that since you were in that and since he was behind the bench. The only team to have three 100-point seasons was the team that you were on and Pat coached.
Yeah, our relationship was really one of silence. I'd play until I got tired, and so it was great for me. I was really self-motivated, and he just let me play, and I always knew I was going to be in there. So as a number one goalie, you really it makes life easier when you know you're just going right back in there, and he had that kind of confidence in me.
We always hear the term player's coach. Did he fall under that umbrella?
Yes, he did. Everybody knew he was a good guy and a fair guy, and a player's coach. And I think with those teams, there was a lot of guys that would make mistakes, and he'd continue to play them. So they would, or in slumps, and they would just play themselves out of slumps. So he was a good coach for that team at that time. It was really a good marriage.
Do you have a story? Do you have a day, a moment, a practice, a game that that you can share with us?
Well, there is one that involves Glenn Healy, and okay. Glenn tells much better than I do. I don't know if you've heard it.
No.
Glenn had a spectacular record against Atlanta, and I think during I forget which season it was, but so, you know, Glenn was like, you know, we talked about him playing in Atlanta, and Glenn would come to me and go, has Pat told you that you're not playing yet? And I said, no, Heels, but I'm sure you're going to play against Atlanta. So Heels is jumping up and down, waving flags and, you know, trying to get Pat's attention the days leading to the game in Atlanta. And Pat didn't tell him anything. So I said, Heels, why don't you just go in the net and, you know, I'll be your backup for tonight. Just go. And he goes, oh, no, he hasn't told me. And I go, no, you should just go in the net. You know, you deserve a start. It's about that time. And anyway, I played the game. I think we lost. And I think he told one of the trainers, he goes, oh, I forgot to tell Heels that he was playing. And Heels was a little upset about that, but it all worked out, and Heels tells it a lot better than I do.
So he wouldn't tell you guys who was playing. It was just you were in until you heard otherwise.
Right, exactly. And that was a bit of old school, and that was the way it was when I came into the league also, because today it's more of a 1A and 1B in a lot of teams. Back in the older days, it was more of a number one and number two kind mm-hmm. of thing. That was the old school thinking.
You mentioned simplified it, just let you play until you needed a break. Here we have today the Edmonton Oilers firing the goaltending coach, and, you know, it's become quite a science in a lot of ways. What was it like in practices about, was he leaving you alone? I know you had a goaltending instructor, but how did he let you go about day-to-day practice as far as handling goaltenders?
No, it was old school. It was, you figured it out. And honestly, today's goaltending, you can't really do that. It is more of a science. There is more technique involved, and for the better. I mean, it is the equipment. Sorry to get off on a tangent, but the equipment dictates the style that you play nowadays and the size of the kids that are playing. So you have little mattresses on your knees, on the inside of your knees, that you can slide around on. You didn't have that before. It was just kind of your bare knee. So there is a science to it. It's very, it's great. It's very efficient. So you do need goalie coaches more today, 90% more today than you did back when I started.
Yeah, but the best part is you went out before the Winter Classic last year in the brand new gear, and you still got hurt. Got a shot in the knee, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I was fine.
Okay.
That wasn't me, but I
remember it otherwise differently over at the Rico Center, where you got a shot in the knee just gearing up. Remember that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you meant in the game.
No. You can still get hurt with the new gear.
Oh, yeah. You can get it for sure. But, the gear is great. It's amazing now. I mean, you could pare it down even further because it is incredible. But, I didn't hear about the goalie coaches getting fired, but we didn't really have goalie coaches that I never had an NHL goalie coach that really took me through my paces like that, not until maybe the last 2 years of my career. It's really changed. Sorry.
You're going to be one of those guys that's leaned on a lot for their thoughts on Pat Quinn. Thank you for coming on the air with us and sharing it with our viewers and listeners.
Oh, my pleasure. He's a great man, and he was a great man, and he deserves all the accolades and brought a lot to the game, and my condolences to the family.
Curtis Joseph with us, a former goaltender with the Toronto Maple Leafs under Pat Quinn, and gold medalist with Pat Quinn, 2002 Salt Lake City Olympic Games. We have about a minute. It's not enough to get into Victor Tikhonov, but two very different coaches. But very obviously accomplished in their traits, and Pat Quinn and Victor Tikhonov. Final thoughts on Pat Quinn.
Well, you know what? I fortunate enough to be around him a lot, and he made two great franchises even better. I mean, I shudder to think where the Vancouver Canucks would be. And let's face it, when everybody talks about current memories of what's gone on in Toronto, what's going on in Toronto, you can talk about what Pat Quinn did in the late 90s and early 2000s and how great it was here.
That's just a touch on the Toronto, just so they talk about the salute, because they don't want all the wrath about not winning Stanley Cup since 1967. Well, there's been a lot of great times in between.
Absolutely.
And Pat Quinn's time, the Pat Quinn era was a great time in Toronto,
and
like
a great
other
player.
Spots.
And a great player. You know, he played on an expansion team in Vancouver and then played on the expansion team in Atlanta as well.
Thanks to Bob Nicholson, George McPhee, Curtis Joseph. Pat Quinn passed away at the age of 71. When you sat with him in a room, you didn't want to talk. Not because he intimidated you, because you just wanted to hear every last word of his story. Thanks for watching and listening.